He clung to the rock and listened to the pack striking the cliff as it fell, the steel of his rifle barrel ringing like a bronze bell off the rock, waking the echoes and sending them bounding from kopje to cliff, a terrifying sound in the night. Long after the pack and rifle had come to rest at the base of the cliff, the echoes still reverberated against the hills. Sean swung himself sideways and was able at last to wedge his shoulder into the crack. He rested like that, panting wildly, the terror of death for the moment unnerving him. Then slowly his breathing eased, and his terror was replaced by the familiar glow of adrenaline in his blood. Suddenly it felt very good still to be alive. "Right to the very edge," he whispered hoarsely. "You have been there again, boyo." The greater the terror, the more intense the thrill. He no longer amazed himself, but here he was again gloating at just how close he could get without going over the edge. The thrill was too fleeting. Within seconds it began to fade, to be replaced by realization of his position. His pack was gone. The rifle, his water bottles, sleeping bag, food, all gone. All that remained were the contents of his pockets and the tiny emergency pack and hunting knife looped to his belt. He whispered, "We'll worry about that when we get to the top." And he began to climb again. With one shoulder wedged into the crack, he was able to push and drag himself upwards an inch at a time, paying for it with skin from his knuckles and bare knees. Gradually the crack continued to open wider until it became a full chimney, and he could get his whole body into it and double one leg under him to propel him upwards more swiftly. At the top, the chimney had eroded and crumbled. One side wall of the chimney had broken away, but it had left a narrow buttress with a flat top. Sean was able to transfer his weight across the chimney until he was standing on the precarious pinnacle. The top of the cliff was still 10 feet above his head. When he reached up to the full stretch of his arms, standing on the tips of his toes, the ledge was still just out of reach. The chimney wall had broken away, clearly leaving a smooth, almost polished surface, without even the minutest hold or purchase. A good safe climber moved from hold to hold with never a single moment when he was totally insecure. In a situation such as this, that hypothetical climber would have driven an iron piton into the rock to give him the hold he needed.
"Look, mummy, no pitons," Sean said grimly. "We'll have to jump for it."
He would only have one chance at it. If he missed his hold on the ledge once he had launched himself, then the next step would be the base of the cliff. He set both feet firmly and sank down at the knees, but he was so cramped on the tip of the buttress that he couldn't get low enough before his face touched the rock and his backside stuck far out over the drop. He took a breath and used both arms and legs to propel himself straight upwards. It was an awkward, hampered jump, but he got high enough to hook both his hands over the edge. For a moment they began to slide back, and then his fingers gripped and held. He kicked both legs and drew himself upwards by the main strength of his arms. His chin came level with a ledge, and in the moonlight he saw in front of him a false crest, simply another ledge below the true top of the cliff. The ledge was obviously occupied by a colony of rock hyrax. The stink of their droppings, sharp and ammoniacal, filled Sean's lungs as he gasped from the effort of holding himself. The hyrax is a plump, fluffy animal. Although it's only the size of a rabbit, it is a remote relative of the elephant and as endearing in appearance as an infant's soft toy. These hyrax were deep in their rocky burrows, and the ledge seemed deserted. Sean hoisted himself up smoothly and hooked one elbow over the edge. He kicked again, gathering himself for the final effort, and then froze. The silence of the night was cut by a loud, high-pitched hiss, like the leaking valve of a truck tire. In the moonlight, what he had taken for a pile of rock lying directly in front of his face altered shape, seeming to melt and flow. In an instant, Sean realized that it was a snake. Only one of the adders would hiss as loudly, and only one adder was that large. It was coiled upon itself, loop after loop of its thick, scaly body, glistening softly. And as it cocked its neck into the menacing S-shape, its eye caught the light of the moon and winked at him sardonically. The huge flat head was the distinctive spade shape of the Gaboon adder, the largest of all the adders, and one of the deadliest of all Africa's venomous snakes. Sean could drop back and try to regain his stance on the narrow pinnacle of rock, but that was a slim chance, and if he missed it, he would plunge down the cliff face. A much better chance would be to try and brave it out. He hung with legs free, trying to control his breathing, staring in horror at the loathsome creature. It was cocked to strike, less than 2 feet from his face, and he knew it would lunge out almost its full body length, 7 feet or more. The slightest movement would trigger it. He hung on his arms, every muscle of his body rigid, staring at the adder, trying to dominate it by the force of his will. The seconds drew out slowly as spilled molasses, and he thought he detected the first relaxation of the taut S of its neck. At that moment his left hand slipped, his fingernails rasped on the rock, and the adder struck with the force of a blacksmith's hammer. Sean rolled his head to the side, like a boxer avoiding a punch. The adder's cold, scaly nose jarred against his jawbone, and there was a fierce tug against his neck and shoulder, so powerful that it jerked one hand loose from its hold on the rock and spun him half round. He was sideways to the ledge, holding on with only his left arm. He knew that the adder had hooked its fangs into his shoulder or the side of his throat, and he expected the exquisite fire of its venom to kindle in his flesh. The serpent was locked onto him, dangling down the front of his body, thick as a salami sausage. It squirmed and thrashed, hissing explosively in his ear. The cold, loathsome touch of its slippery scales brushed against his bare flesh. Sean almost screamed with the sheer horror of it. The adder's weight threw him about as it lashed from side to side, and its loud hisses deafened him. He felt his single-handed grip on the ledge slipping, but the prospect of the drop below him was suddenly insignificant when compared to this foul creature fastened to his neck. He felt an icy spray of liquid on the side of his throat and his jaw. It dribbled down the opening of his bush jacket, and with a rush of relief he knew that the adder had missed his throat and had fastened into the collar of his jacket. Its fangs were fully 2 inches long and viciously recurved, designed to penetrate and hang on to its prey. Hooked into the khaki cotton material of his collar, its violent struggles were forcing the venom out of the hollow, bony needles, squirting onto his throat and bare skin. The realization that the fangs had not penetrated his flesh rallied him, firmed his grip on the ledge, and arrested his slow slide into the drop. His right hand was still free. He reached up and seized the adder's neck, just at the back of its flat, diamond-shaped head. His fingers could barely span the massive body, and he felt the enormous power of its muscles beneath the glassy scales. He tried to pull it free, but the fangs were like fish hooks in the heavy cloth, and the serpent hissed more viciously, and its grotesque body, patterned like a patchwork quilt, coiled around his forearm. He used all his strength, holding onto the ledge with his left arm, heaving at the adder with his right, and he tore the fangs from the roof of its gaping mouth, so that its dark blood mingled with the copious flow of its venom, and he flung the twisting, coiling body far out over the drop. Then he swung back and grabbed with his right hand at the rock of the ledge. He was sobbing softly with horror and exertion, and it was fully half a minute before he could gather himself sufficiently to pull himself up and crawl onto the edge. He knelt on the rock floor and shrugged out of his bush jacket. The front of it was wet with venom, and one of the adder's fangs was broken off and still buried in the cloth of the collar. He worked it loose, and careful to avoid the needle point, flicked it out over the cliff. Then with his handkerchief, he wiped his skin dry. He considered the danger of wearing the jacket again. The venom might be absorbed through the pores of the sensitive skin under his jaw, It could cause ulcers or worse. But to discard the jacket would expose his body to tomorrow's tropical sun. He hesitated and rolled the jacket and fastened it into his belt. He would wash it out at the first opportunity. The thought of water made him aware of his thirst. The climb had dehydrated him, and his water bottle was with a pack at the bottom of the cliff. He had to find water before tomorrow's noon, but now his first concern must be to get off the exposed face of the cliff and into cover. He stood up and felt the night breeze cold on the sweat of his bare upper body. From the ledge on which he stood, it was an easy pitch to the crest, more a scramble than a climb. However, he took it carefully, and when he reached the top, he lay for a few minutes with just his head peering over the crest. A haze of light cloud had veiled the moon, and Sean could see very little. The bush that grew so densely up the sides of the valley had spread across the tops of the cliffs and formed a dark wall just ahead. There were probably 40 yards of rocky ground, open except for coarse knee-high grass, and then he would be into the cover of the bush. He rose to his feet and ran forward, crouching as low as possible. As he crossed the skyline, and he was halfway to the edge of the bush, when the light hit him. It stopped him dead as though he had run into the rock cliff, and he flung up his hands instinctively to protect his eyes, for his vision had been shattered and starred by the brilliance of the light beamed full into his face. Then he flung himself face forward into the grass and flattened his body against the stony earth. The beam of light threw long black shadows behind each boulder and cast a bright reflective glow from the pale winter grass. Sean dare not raise his head. He pressed his face to the earth, exposed and vulnerable and helpless in that fierce white beam. He waited for something to happen, but the silence was unbroken. Even the usual night sounds of nocturnal birds and insects were quenched, so that the voice, when at last it boomed out of the trees, magnified and distorted by an electronic bullhorn, was as shocking as a blow in the face. "Good evening, Colonel Courtney." It was spoken in good English, barely touched by an African accent. "You made excellent time. 27 minutes, 15 seconds from the base of the cliff to the top." Sean did not move, but he lay and absorbed the bitter humiliation of it. They had been toying with him. "But I cannot give you high marks for stealth. What was it you threw down the rock? It sounded like a bunch of old tin pots." The speaker chuckled sardonically and then went on. "And now, Colonel, if you are sufficiently rested, would you be gracious enough to stand up and raise both hands above your head?" Sean didn't move. "I beg of you, sir, don't waste your time and mine." Sean lay still, considering wildly the possibility of dashing back over the crest behind him. "Very well, I see you have to be convinced." There was a brief pause, and Sean heard a soft order given in dialect. The burst of automatic fire tore into the earth 3 paces from where he lay. He saw the fiery blur of the muzzle flashes among the dark trees and heard the distinctive rush of the RPD light machine gun, like a strip of heavy-duty canvas being ripped through. The stream of bullets scythed the grass and raised a mist of yellow dust in the bright light. Sean came slowly to his feet. The beam of light fastened on his face, but he refused to turn his head away or shield his eyes. "Hands at full stretch above the head, please, Colonel." He obeyed. His naked upper body was very white in the light. "I am delighted to see you've kept yourself in good shape, Colonel." 2 dark figures detached themselves from the tree line. Keeping well clear of the light beam, they circled out on either side of him and came up in Sean's rear. From the corner of his eyes, Sean saw they wore tiger-striped battle dress and that their AK rifles were aimed at him. He ignored them until suddenly the steel butt plate of one of the rifles crashed into his spine between the shoulder blades, and he fell to his knees.